What on earth is going on at Auntie?
At least today's decision comes as quite a shock.
This morning, which is that she leaves the business.
Never known morale to be as bad as it is now.
I certainly didn't know about it before I saw it in the newspaper.
You start to get self-censorship creeping in. That's the most insidious thing of all.
After days of explosive claims that he tried to compromise the public broadcaster's independence.
And the one thing we expect in return is to have our backs covered.
Will you be continuing as ABC chairman?
No, Lee, I won't.
From the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain, a weekly podcast where you and I get the full story on some of the most significant issues facing Australia and a look inside the newsrooms that bring them to you. I'm Tori Maguire. Welcome to the second episode of Please Explain. The volcanic eruptions at the ABC this week have us asking that very question. Joining me on this episode is James Chessel, the executive editor of Fairfax's Metro Mastheads, and Jacqueline Malley, one of the Herald's senior columnists. Hello.
Hello.
Later on, we'll hear from former Media Watch host Jonathan Holmes, who'll explain the ABC charter, which seems to have taken on an almost mythical significance. And The Age's Brody Carmody will talk us through what all of this means for the shows and the stations you love. But before we dive in, our producer Rachel Dexter goes through how it was that within the course of a few short days, two of Australia's most powerful public servants were booted out.
Michelle Guthrie was appointed Managing Director of the ABC in May 2016. Chairman Justin Milne started his role about a year later. Reports say Milne asked Guthrie to stand down 2 weeks ago, and after considering it, Guthrie decided to stay on. It all kicked off this week on Sunday night when the board decided to sack Guthrie. The public announcement on Monday caught everyone off guard.
The managing director of the ABC, Michelle Guthrie, has been sacked by the board of the national broadcaster.
Michelle Guthrie made a number of changes to this organisation, some good, most bad.
Guthrie said she was devastated, and by Tuesday she hired lawyers. Then on Wednesday, The Herald and The Age published details from a leaked email sent from Milne to Guthrie earlier this year.
The headline is, Guthrie ordered to sack top ABC reporter.
In it, Milne asked Guthrie to dump senior ABC journalist Emma Alberici because the government, quote, hated her. Within hours, ABC staff in capital cities held snap stop work meetings, demanding Milne's resignation.
It is absolutely critical that the independence of the ABC be safeguarded from political interference. Thank you.
But Milne dug in and, with the board's support, refused to stand down. By evening Wednesday, Prime Minister Scott Morrison directed the Federal Communications Department to launch an investigation into the claims of interference.
ABC, with calls tonight for Chairman Justin Milne to resign. ABC staff are demanding...
Then, on Thursday, after days of damaging leaks and public pressure, Justin Milne quit.
So, James, who comes out of this looking the worst?
Tori, I have no idea how to answer that question, but I can say with some certainty that nobody comes out of this well. Michelle Guthrie is finishing the week better than she started, but she will be remembered as a weak leader who presided over an almost total breakdown of relationships with Canberra. Justin Milne, the chairman's been exposed as someone who's way too interested in what the Prime Minister has to say about ABC content. The board looks bad, and frankly, some of the staff don't look great in their reaction to this amazing drama that we've seen this week.
So how did this happen, Jack? I mean, the board said on Monday when they booted Michelle Guthrie that it was because of her leadership style, but it was about so much more than that, wasn't it?
People are sort of looking to the board now because it seems that the board was handed a dossier that was supposed to sort of back or explain why Milne wanted to sack Guthrie, and within that dossier there was laid bare that Milne had sort of put pressure on, or allegedly put pressure on, to sack certain journalists over their political coverage. So I would say at this point it's the board who's looking pretty bad, or the other board members who look pretty bad and have to explain themselves. It's a really interesting one because it's just this incredible mirroring of the stuff that we've seen in Canberra has sort of, you know, it's like a cancerous tumour that's just enveloping all parts of the body politic.
So as parts of this dossier that Michelle Guthrie presented to the board last Friday have come out this week, mostly in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, Was that her sort of attempt to threaten them before they even sacked her, do you think?
Whether she did or not, Tori, if you're a director and you read that dossier carefully, you would think to yourself, I need to be very careful. And that's obviously a tactical consideration. I also think, and this is a much more important point, you'd start having pretty severe doubts about the competency of the chairman and the judgment of the chairman. And only once that stuff became public has the board turned against the chairman. So to echo Jack's point, I think they look pretty weak. I think the problem with Justin's actions were not that he was frustrated with Emma Alberici. Some of the pieces she did weren't great and they contained errors. What the problem was that he linked his dissatisfaction with issues such as ABC funding and also his relationship with the Prime Minister. So you're mixing the political and the editorial, and the job of the chairman of the ABC is to ensure that those two things don't get mixed up.
Isn't it also a problem that he overreached in asking for staff members to be sacked or directing staff members to be sacked? Because a chair shouldn't really be involved in that kind of decision making.
I think that's a bit of a grey area. I think that's a fair point. I don't think a chairman's role is to micromanage. And in fact, a chairman should direct those kind of managerial decisions through a managing director or, in the corporate world, a chief executive. But I also don't think it's unheard of. It certainly didn't help. I personally think that the real problem was he seemed to be motivated by his relationship with Malcolm Turnbull, his friendship with Malcolm Turnbull, rather than the best interests of the ABC when he sent these emails and when he had these conversations with Michelle Guthrie.
Just extraordinary as well that, my understanding is when you're elevated to management level at the ABC, one of the first things that you're told in your training is everything you put in an email is FOIable. Everything you put in an email, you should imagine it on the front page of the SMH and the Age. And the fact that he's been, it's not just the bias or alleged bias, but it's the perception of bias, which is so damning. And the fact that he's sort of put that down in writing in an email is quite extraordinary.
So why, when they announced the sacking of Michelle Guthrie on Monday, the media coverage was widely that Michelle Guthrie had been a disaster? What was it? Where did she go wrong?
I think there are a couple of things. She was a bad communicator, first and foremost. Part of the job of a managing director in any organisation, and more so at the ABC, where you have a lot of you have staff that are heavily unionised and very sceptical journalists. You have viewers that are very conscious about how the ABC should be in their view. You've got to communicate. You've got to tell the story of the ABC. You've got to explain why you're making changes. And I think the second thing her second failure was the relationship with Canberra. The ABC managing director needs to be in Canberra talking to the MPs, whether she gets on with them or not. And it was something that she avoided.
I mean, most of the criticism that I have heard, you know, reported, but also in conversations that I've had with people, is around her not sticking up for her journalists enough, ironically, that she wasn't seen to be on the front foot pushing back against the coalition allegations of bias and left-wing bias within the ABC. And she just wasn't seen as being a big enough advocate for the journalism. And I suppose that a lot of the leaks we've seen in the last few days have been certainly maybe predicated to counterbalance that impression. The relationship with Canberra was bad. I think also she was probably, a lot of the move towards trying to capture youth audiences and digitisation and, you know, going online with a lot of content was probably hung on her head, rightly or wrongly. And a lot of people, that annoyed a lot of people within the organisation.
And I think there were concerns as well, Jack, about some of the more heritage parts of the ABC,
yeah,
like Radio National, that she didn't have a feel or
yeah,
or the proper love an ABC MD should have for those parts.
Yep, that's right. And there was sort of a little bit of a bun fight to do with Four Corners, which is a bit sort of inside baseball to go into. But she was seen in some quarters as not backing that really traditional flagship ABC stuff that your sort of 65-year-old viewer, in Castle Crag has always really loved and will always really love.
So what is this mysterious project Jetstream?
I think probably the first a lot of most people had heard of it was this week. I really like, I love the branding. Yeah, we should get on board with that kind of branding at Fairfax. Isn't it? It's about infrastructure, isn't it? It's about digital infrastructure and putting all the ABC archives and programs and stuff in the cloud, wherever the cloud may be.
So I think it's a super iView. That is part of it. So you can get whatever you want, whatever piece of ABC content online whenever you want. But I think it also envisaged a world where ABC is not broadcast through traditional means, so conventional television and radio. It's coming through the internet, and you need different infrastructure for that.
So how did that play into what happened this week?
Well, it seems as if Justin Milne and Michelle Guthrie had very different ideas about how fast the jet stream should be flowing and in which direction. I think Justin Milne was a much bigger proponent of it. But it does go to this point where we mentioned Radio National before. There are these parts of the ABC that people love really, really, and they hold it very close to their heart. But if I could say something in Guthrie's defence, she was trying to work to a world where everything is digital, and that involves change, and not everyone likes change in organisations.
So he made the decision to resign on Thursday after the board met without him and requested that he step down for the duration of a government inquiry into his alleged political interference. And he said, no, I've got to resign. Has he saved Scott Morrison and Mitch Fifield, the communications minister, from a huge headache? Because sacking an ABC board is actually very difficult.
My first thought about Scott Morrison this week is he must just be thinking, thank God someone else is engulfed in leadership crisis and someone else's bin is on fire. I think probably if they weren't going to sack him outright, then they would have just leaned on him privately to say, look, mate, your position's untenable and we don't have confidence in you anymore. It'll be interesting. Now we sort of throw forward, it'll be interesting to see who they have on their shortlist or who they eventually appoint to replace Milne.
I think the answer to that question will take some time to answer. I think every journalist in the country is going to go over every conversation, every email they can get their hands on between the government and the ABC over the recent years. There'll be FOI requests flying left, right and centre. So if Scott Morrison and Mitch Fifield have been sensible in the way they've dealt with the ABC, that I'm sure they have nothing to worry about, but there'll be people crawling all over this story for a long time to come.
The ABC is unique as a government department because of its charter. Someone who understands it better than most is former ABC Media Watch host Jonathan Holmes.
The ABC Charter is a small part of the ABC Act, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Act 1983. And the charter really just outlines what the ABC's job is. It outlines its functions. And it's a pretty kind of vague, quite short bit of the Act. It says what its functions are, things like to provide within Australia innovative and comprehensive broadcasting services of a high standard, that sort of stuff, right? It actually doesn't mention news and current affairs at all, except to say that the ABC should transmit to countries outside Australia news, current affairs, entertainment and cultural enrichment, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't mention news and current affairs at all within Australia.
It seems to have taken on a huge cultural significance, though, doesn't it? I mean, everyone's always waving the ABC charter around to support their argument.
Well, I think they probably get it wrong. I think what they actually mean is the ABC Act. For example, what is relevant at the moment in the current row? The Act describes the duties of the ABC board in Section 8, and two of those duties are to maintain the independence and integrity of the corporation, and also to ensure that the gathering and presentation by the corporation of news and information is accurate and impartial according to the recognised standards of objective journalism. Now, those two clauses are far more important, in my view, certainly more relevant to the crisis that we're going through at the moment than anything in the ABC Charter.
Do those two clauses point to the board's ability to intervene in editorial matters?
I think that they certainly give it, the duty, as it says, to ensure that the gathering of views and current affairs is accurate and impartial. Now, how they do that is a matter for interpretation. And what they've traditionally done, the board has traditionally done, is to firstly approve of the ABC's editorial policies, and secondly, to satisfy itself that the managing director is enforcing those editorial policies. But in the end, it's the managing director that is the implementer, if you like, of whatever the board's desires are. But, you know, even more important, arguably, than that duty is the duty to maintain the independence and integrity of the corporation. And, you know, a chairman who says that because the government is upset with a particular journalist, she has to go, you know, how that's maintaining the independence and integrity of the corporation is very, very questionable, I would have thought.
Jack, everyone in Australia has an opinion on this. Why do people care so much about the ABC?
Well, we own it. That's the sort of main thing, I think, about the ABC, isn't it? It belongs to us. It belongs to the taxpayer. And I think we have this enormous sense of ownership that goes back to many of our childhoods, you know, where many of us have reared on ABC. And then you go through, then you might graduate to Triple J, and then you become a consumer of the news channels. People trust it, and so they go to it. And that's why politicians care about it so much, because they know that actually the ABC has a higher level of trust among the population and among its voters than politicians themselves do.
So is it a brave politician, James, that messes with the ABC's funding?
I think that is true. The ABC has four key stakeholders. There's the staff that produce the news and the entertainment. There's the audience. There's the government of the day, which, as Jack said, on behalf of the taxpayer, funds the ABC. And then there's also the Rupert Murdoch-controlled press. So you're never going to keep the last one happy. And it's almost impossible to keep the first three happy at the same time. And it's interesting to see politicians interact with the ABC. Some Conservative MPs live in electorates where there's a huge amount of people who watch the ABC. So while they might not be sympathetic with a lot of the content that comes out of it, they also know a lot of their voters are attached to the ABC. So it's an interesting relationship they have with it.
Unlike perhaps other media, which are a little bit more siloed towards coalition voters or Labor voters, the ABC, I think, you know, is across the board. Both Liberal and Labor voters watch it equally, in equal numbers and very faithfully. And also there's all the regional, you know, it is the main source of news in regional Australia. So the Nats voters obviously look to it.
Is any government ever happy with the ABC and how it's performing and reporting?
I think it's really important to note that it has always been this way. It's been a spectacular implosion this week, but I was looking over the history books, and in 1991, Bob Hawke gave a very famous interview to the Daily Telegraph in which he described the ABC's coverage of the Gulf War as loaded, biased and disgraceful, and his relationship with David Hill, who was running the ABC then, never recovered.
So what's an appropriate way for the government to be heard on this?
The way to do it with integrity and transparency, if indeed that's what politicians are interested in, is to do it formally through the proper channels and to keep its complaints, a government's complaints, to the facts. If there's a factual error in a story or an inaccuracy in a story, like, you know, Turnbull and Mitch Fifield said there was with some of Emma Alberici's reporting, then by all means, like, complain about it. Complain on the record, do it in writing. What really undermines trust both in politicians and, you know, corporate sort of board members or chairmen of boards is this idea that, you know, that it happens, you know, in the box at the cricket, or it happens when you're at a dinner party, this sort of, you know, feeling that it's a conversation that is not transparent, that happens between elite groups.
Everyone on the government side has denied vehemently that they ordered anyone sacking, or so it looks like, perhaps, if that's true, it looks like just overreach by Justin Milne.
Yeah, if we accept what Mitch Fifield and Malcolm Turnbull have said, which is that they made complaints about factual errors and inaccuracies but did not call for anyone to be sacked, then clearly the chairman overreacted. And the chairman of any media company, including Fairfax, acts as a buffer in some respects. They're often going to be at the box in the cricket or the box at the AFL grand final last year and receive complaints. That's the nature of the business. And it seems pretty clear that Milne was over-enthusiastic in his relaying of some of these complaints.
So the managing director it's a very hard job. They have to be the editor-in-chief of the biggest newsroom in the country. They have to run a budget of more than $1 billion. They have to be a lobbyist and have good relationships in Canberra. And they have to be a public figure who defends their staff. Is there any one person that has all four of those qualifications for this job?
I think it is a really hard job. A very, very hard thing to do. Mark Scott was pretty universally liked, and I don't remember many criticisms of him on any side during his time as MD. Having said that, like, we had a piece that we ran in our papers this week about how it might be a good idea to split the role into a more of a CEO type role and then an editorial director role, like we have at Fairfax or in any media organisation. And it is an interesting question of, you know, if the MD's role is to sort of lobby government for better funding for the ABC, which it should be, then how do you do that without sort of also bringing your journalism into it and, you know, your contentious journalism into it and saying, but, you know, you should fund more of it because look how great it is. That puts you in an invidious position because no government is going to think journalism that is critical of it is great.
I think that's a really important point. The problem that Milne appeared to get himself into was tying $500 million in potential funding for this big IT project to the performance of journalists, which clearly crossed a line. And so I have a lot of sympathy for this argument of creating a separate editor-in-chief role or something similar that removes the MD from some of those potential conflicts that you just mentioned, because it's really, really difficult. The only thing I'd add is there's been a bit of a glorification, I think, of the Mark Scott era in the recent week. And there's no doubt he was an excellent MD in many respects. He made cuts. He made difficult decisions. Mm. He lost the Australian network. He had a rather ill-fated speech into the ABC being part of Australia's soft diplomacy efforts in the region. So he wasn't perfect, but he's looking pretty good in comparison with what we've had this week. I will admit that.
Okay, we'll leave that here. Thanks for your time, James. When we come back, Jack and I will be with The Age's Brodie Carmody to discuss what this means for viewers and listeners of the national broadcaster.
Hi, I'm Jess Irvine. Thanks for listening to Please Explain. The Sydney Morning Herald and Age newsrooms are home to the country's most experienced economics editors and reporters, delivering trusted news and analysis. But we can't do it without you. Our subscribers get unlimited access to our award-winning independent journalism, plus exclusive behind-the-scenes stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe today and support news you can trust.
Well, I'm still here with Jack Malley from the Sydney Morning Herald, and now we have brought in Brodie Carmody, who's an entertainment reporter based at The Age, to talk about what this means for viewers and listeners of the ABC. Brodie, can I start with you? What actually changed for the audience during Guthrie's tenure?
Obviously, there were the major things we saw on TV and radio, like Late Line being axed, flagship current affair radio programs such as PM and The World Today having their time on air slashed in half. But I think it's also important to think about the smaller things that happened on screen and on the airwaves and on the internet under Guthrie's reign. You know, subtler things like the double-header breakfast programs in Melbourne and Sydney with a focus on lighter content that angered a lot of the ABC's traditional listeners. At 7:30, Lee Sales doing a pop culture interview at the end of the show. So there was a lot of things.
Can we put that down to Michelle Guthrie's vision, or is it more complicated than that?
I think it is more complicated than that, but I think largely people speaking to presenters who are on radio and on TV from various newsrooms this week, a lot of them have pointed the finger at Guthrie. You know, she was seen as a champion of viral, cheap TV shows like You Can't Ask That. And I think internally there was a little bit of a view that that was to the detriment of long-form current affairs.
I read somewhere this week that Michelle Guthrie kept mentioning Gogglebox as being her favourite television show, which is something that I think would surprise a lot of ABC viewers. Jack, do you think there's a danger in messing with the vibe of the ABC?
Yeah, of course there is, because you're always going to, I suppose, alienate more traditional, rusted-on, perhaps older viewers. But you know, the counterpoint to that is that you've got to attract younger viewers. The ABC, you know, ABC viewers tend to be old and they're getting older. We mentioned something like You Can't Ask That. That was brilliant television, I thought. I mean, that was brought in, I think, from an outside production company. It was actually brilliant, brilliant television that I think was very well executed. It was enormously popular. If we could get more of that kind of content, I think it would be a good thing. And it was probably a good way of getting younger viewers in. I suppose, though, when you're trying to attack younger viewers and in such a competitive media market where, you know, which is globalised, then you're going to have to try a lot of different things.
So if the test is ratings, which I suppose it has to be, because what other test is there apart from just the general sort of national pride in the ABC, Brodie? Have the changes that have happened worked?
Not yet. But ratings, the thing we talk about with ratings often is that a show has dived in the ratings or it's lost audience share. It's really important with ratings to think long term. So this year, for example, in Melbourne, the ABC got rid of Red Simons and they replaced him with two presenters who are relatively young speaking. You know, the average ABC listener is about 60 years old, so young for them, even if they were in their, you know, 30s. And look, their audience share has halved since they took over from Red Simon's old spot. So on that measure, no. But I guess internally at the ABC, some are arguing that you've got to give it time. The question that is crucial is whether or not the new managing director is going to stick to that plan or alter it in some way. And that's what's really going to affect what Australians are going to see on TV and radio in the coming months.
Given we don't know who that is yet, it's all speculation, but it would be very tempting, wouldn't it, for a new MD to make some visible immediate changes to the lineup?
Yes, it would be a very easy political win. For example, under Guthrie, an easy win that she had was tipping a lot of money into rural and regional areas. You know, some bureaus, even just a few hours' drive out of Sydney and Melbourne, had only one journalist covering, you know, hundreds of kilometres. And now some of them have, you know, two, three journalists and a video reporter. You know, it's really changed the kind of coverage that you're getting. An assiduous viewer of ABC News 24, now called the ABC TV channel, would notice that, yeah, if you watch the 6 p.m. bulletin, there's colour stories from all around Australia. So I think that was an easy win for Guthrie, and an easy win for the new managing director could be, you know, is continuing her legacy of digital transformation. As we've said, you've got to chase new audiences, but not giving the perception that you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, you know, rather having a second child while you're caring for the first firstborn. And I say that as a jealous firstborn myself. Yeah, so an easy win there, I think.
My own experience is that I started with the ABC watching Play School, and then as a teenager, you know, got into the news, and now the only ABC television I consume is probably 7:30 and Rake, although I do listen to a lot of ABC radio. Is there still a pathway for Australians to, you know, move up through the Play School years, through Triple J, and end up being a local ABC morning listener?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And the fact that they created the ABC Kids channel, apart from sort of being an enormous relief and comfort to millions of parents across the country.
Not to mention the iPad app for emergencies.
That's right. And they've now got this gorgeous little ABC Listen app. I don't know if you ever use that, but I've just discovered that, and it's for kids, and it has all this extra content, which is story time and little songs, and they have all sorts of people reading them. I think absolutely it will continue to sort of be a backbeat through people's lives. It's just that they have to be able to deliver them that content where they're going to be watching it, which is not going to be on TV.
So, Brodie, is there anything people can do if they're a viewer or a listener and they don't like the changes that have been made? I mean, if you're devastated that your morning presenter that you loved has been moved on, what are you supposed to do?
Something that people have been doing, and the ABC cops a lot, is a lot of commentary on social media. I know of one ABC duo who have reportedly turned off the text line on their screens in the studio because they just had constant negative feedback. There's a difference between, doing stuff like that and actually perhaps even writing to your local MP or writing to the letters page of your local newspaper, even writing to the ABC bosses in question with actually outlining a bit of a positive vision. I think what's happened is a lot of people are up in arms. We're reporting on people being up in arms and the ratings crashing. I think if people are going to complain anyway, but they should do it in a way that cuts through the noise. And I think a really clever way to do that is to reach out to the ABC managers via email directly. And they're easy enough to get in contact.
So finally, as viewers and consumers yourselves, not necessarily as journalists, do you think the ABC is giving you your money's worth?
Yeah. I mean, I watch it more than any other channel, absolutely. Yeah, I do, actually. And in terms of, certainly as a parent, in terms of the kid content, I think it's marvellous. It's exactly what I want my kid to be watching when I'm not parenting her actively.
What about you, Brody?
Yes, it is giving us what it's worth in the sense that for 4 cents a day, I'm getting more than anything I could ever get from, say, Netflix or Foxtel, and more than I could ever consume. I think the question is it actually giving you stuff that you will consume? And I think that's a really critical question. For me, yes and no. There's a lot of TV shows that I regularly watch. There's radio shows that I listen into. But I'm not sure how much I would engage with some of the other projects that they're involved in, like ABC Life. I think for me as a millennial, I've got enough things going on Instagram and Twitter to worry about than how to pickle beetroot. I can use Google for that.
All right. Well, Brody and Jack, thanks so much for joining me on Please Explain.
Thank you, Tori.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone you heard on the podcast today, James Chessel, Jacqueline Malley, Jonathan Holmes and Brody Carmody. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. Support the work we do. Our subscribers get unlimited access to award-winning independent journalism, plus exclusive behind-the-scenes stories you can't get anywhere else. Follow the link in our show bio to subscribe today. This episode was produced by Rachel Dexter and David Escort, with technical assistance from David McMillan, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.